there. You're listening to Drinking from the Toilet, and I'm your host, Hannah Brannigan. This week, we're going to talk about planning and training plans and planning routines. I'm constantly pushing myself and my students in my online classes to make training plans. I've even gone so far as to create a template, which is freely available for download on my website to make planning out training sessions easier. But why should we even bother? Why should we make a plan when everything can change? As soon as you decide on a training plan, your dog will do something and you'll have to make a totally different plan. Yes, Hannah, we know you're always going on about science and crap like that, but training is an art. There's a feel to it. You have to feel the training at the dog. Well, I don't disagree. There is a lot of art in the science of dog training. And you don't always need a plan if you're doing something that is automatic and you don't need to change it or improve it in any way. You probably don't need a plan if you're brushing your teeth, unless you discover that your previous toothbrushing technique behavior was flawed and needs to be improved upon for health reasons. But probably most people out there are pretty happy with that behavior, and it's fluent for their purposes as far as their needs go. Plans do become important when you're trying to train something new that you've never done before and you haven't any experience with it. They're also important when we want to make some kind of change, if you want to make something different happen than what's been happening, particularly if you want to change a habit in yourself or in your dogs, and that's a lot of what dog training is. Plans are also really helpful if there are a lot of moving parts that you have to keep track of. If the behavior is very complex or there are a lot of elements, if you're working with distractions or multiple dogs or in distracting environments where there's a lot of different things to keep track of, everything gets more complex, then having a plan in advance becomes really, really helpful. And plans are really helpful anytime you feel overwhelmed by choices or by too much information, especially again if it's a complex process like preparing to compete in a particular sport. There's a lot of different options. There are a lot of choices. Which path should you take? In those places, having a plan in advance is a really, really helpful thing. So if you've had dogs for a while, you probably don't need a plan to housebreak a new dog or puppy unless something weird comes up and some really strange health or behavioral thing off the walls. Between my own dogs, my foster dogs, and past board and train clients — I don't take board and train anymore, but I used to — I've taken a lot of puppies and young dogs through a typical housebreaking procedure. I've internalized all those basic actions and decision points. I know what to do, and it's pretty automatic. I have an automatic management plan and a scheduling process. Everything is very routine, and it all really can happen without much conscious thought. So when Rugby joined our family a couple of years ago, I didn't bother making out a housebreaking plan. I just went ahead and did what I would normally do, but it worked just fine. He was a pretty normal puppy in that respect, and my normal housebreaking routine worked just fine. Within even just a couple of weeks, he was well incorporated into the routine and no big problems showed up, right? So I was able to depend on my previously established habits and routines. But a first-time puppy-owning family won't have those already established habits and routines to fall back on. The more moving parts, which often translates to the number of family members involved, the faster they can feel overwhelmed. So, you know, a family that has two working parents and two or three kids that have lacrosse practice and singing lessons, or I don't actually even know what normal families do these days. But if there's a lot of different things to deal with, they can feel overwhelmed really quickly and fail, right? Which is very interesting, especially since for those of us who have housebroken dozens of puppies, housebreaking seems so obvious. It's like a total duh. How can you not housebreak your dog? But those things are not obvious to someone who's never done it before, to brand new novice dog owners, new puppy owners. They don't have the ingrained habit of rolling out of bed at the crack of dawn, staggering to the crate to escort the puppy outside. And they probably also don't have the habit of standing outside with that puppy to make sure that the puppy actually eliminates before coming inside to fix their coffee. It takes a lot of brain power, especially at that time of day. Now, I can do all of those things, fortunately, without actually waking up. I don't actually have to be conscious to take a dog from the crate outside and wait for it to eliminate. This is not true for most new puppy owners. So they need a plan. And if you're a professional trainer, then, well, it's our job to give them that plan. because planning isn't really about the dog's behavior, it's about ours. We can't really control the dog. All we can do is try to set up contingencies that result in the change in behavior we're after. So we can control our behavior, change our behavior to get the outcome, the change in the dog's behavior that we want through manipulation of those contingencies. Planning does the thinking and deciding in advance. So it simplifies the amount of information by acting as a filter, either for you in the heat of the moment or for your clients. So for a client who is new to training, they're probably still wrestling with motor skills, remembering the basics, how to reinforce and actually doing it. And they're going to be dealing with some of that natural struggle that comes with changing any behavior. None of us are immune to this. It doesn't matter if it's dog training or something else. There's very likely to be some extinction burst happening because the previous behaviors don't pay anymore. And isn't that the definition of extinction? They've been performing this behavior, which has always been reinforced, and now all of a sudden it's not. Maybe even being, there may be aversive results. So it's natural to feel some frustration there. I know, I've been there. I've seen both sides of it. By giving our client a plan, especially something that they can check off, it really softens that frustration by giving us some quick wins. It'll let us focus on mastering the mechanics because we can do the deciding for them. Or if this is a plan for ourselves, we're doing our own deciding in advance. Making a decision is usually more timely or time expensive and energy expensive than actually following through on whatever that decision was going to be. So by doing that before the situation actually happens, we can act faster. And a lot of times when you're in the middle of things, when you're dealing with a behavior problem or a new family dealing with a new puppy, you just don't have the bandwidth to make a decision. A new puppy owner doesn't have the mental space to decide if they should put the puppy in an X pen or in a crate. And also follow through on setting an alarm, remember to take the puppy out on a schedule, which is different from their normal routine. So by giving them a plan, by filtering the information, making the decisions for them or for yourself, this really is a way of applying successive approximation for the human's behavior. So we're only asking for one criteria at a time, and it's the actual following through. If you've been training a little bit longer, hopefully your mechanics are at least a little bit fluent. And so those of us that have been doing training a little more experience, we have a lot more room to think on the fly. We can put food delivery on autopilot and just focus on observing, looking at the dog's behavior and observing it and deciding when to do certain things. We don't have to think so much about getting the food to the dog. We can think a lot more about what we're seeing and evaluate and analyze that in real time. We also, if this is something we've trained before, we know that at certain points, there are only a limited set of choices to be made. And we have preset ideas of what the relative values of those choices are. What is the advantage of putting the puppy in a crate versus putting the puppy in an X pen? And we've thought through those things in advance so we know which one is going to be more valuable to us in that moment. That doesn't work as well if this isn't something you've ever done before. You may not know what choices are going to be available to you at different points and which of those choices are going to be more valuable. And a new client, they don't have that value assessment in advance, so they're likely seeing all choices as equal. And that makes for a hard decision. And of course, if you are faced with a decision trying to pick between two or more choices that seem about the same, well, that leads to displacement, which of course doesn't really help, again, achieve that outcome. So it's possible that I personally have a few habits that I'd like to change, both professionally, in my training, and also perhaps in some of my interpersonal family relationships. And maybe there's a few situations, some behaviors that I'm not thrilled with. I'd love to see different outcomes happen. So as you may know, my primary defensive strategy is to do a lot of research. So whenever I'm faced with a problem or an uncomfortable situation, I will, well, honestly, it's often kind of a delay displacement tactic, right? I'll do a whole lot of research on whatever that topic is. So as I started thinking about, okay, I'm unhappy with the way a few of these things are going, I'd like to see something different happen here, I jump right in and I start researching all the things that make behavior change more likely. What do we have information about? What are the recommendations? And what's really interesting is that this, the idea of planning or the topic of planning comes up a lot, even in different areas of research. So like many of us, I generally have very good intentions. I would say I have the best of intentions. No, seriously, like if intentions were a competitive sport, I would have the best intentions in the world. My intentions are better than yours. They are the best intentions, right? Okay. But of course, intentions are not enough. We actually have to act, which I think is kind of crappy. I'd love to be able to just rest on the glory of my good intentions, but that doesn't work. And it gets really hard acting or deciding to act and actually following through when that means giving up some temporary short-term reinforcers in favor of long-term reinforcers. So in the short term, yelling and throwing a shoe may help you feel better. You may feel a little release of kind of that pent-up emotional energy. It may stop whatever's going on temporarily. It's not going to result in long-term behavior change in most cases, and it's not going to result in long-term behavior change in yourself either. But that little kind of negative reinforcement event can maintain that shoe-throwing behavior. I've heard. This is not something I would ever do, of course. So, but it can be really hard to give those up, even knowing that if you were to make this long-term behavior change, if you were to make different decisions, then you'd get a better outcome in the long run. And it turns out that there's actually a lot of scientific study in this area, because this is an ongoing problem with humanity in general, right? Like, how many of us know how we could live a healthier lifestyle? We know how to exercise or how to eat better. We just don't follow through on it. And of course, that has outcomes that affect individual and population health. This is true for so many things, where doing something in the short run may be more reinforcing temporarily than the long-term outcome, which we would say that we would prefer, right? So there's a lot of psychological studies trying to determine what can we do to bridge the difference between having a really good intention and actually turning that into an outcome. So making a goal of improving some behavior or changing some aspect of your life, or in our case, our training and our dogs, and how can we turn that goal into action? And of course, the difference between where you are now and your goal is a plan, right? So we need to make a plan to take us from where our starting point to our goal. And so I ran across some really kind of really interesting studies. And so there's several that from the 90s and even a little more recently studying this concept of implementation. So implementation means the actual doing, applying those things that you already know. We know how to exercise. We have to actually do it, much harder. Same thing with our training. You know what you should do to make your training better. Why is it so hard to actually act on it? So I took a look at some of these studies, and there's some really cool specific things that we can take away from it. So one of the first things that I really loved is this idea of an if-then plan. So if you take a goal and you apply, it's already sort of an if-then. So if you take a goal and apply an if-then plan, success rates dramatically increase than if you just state the goal. So here's an example. One of the articles that I read, this professor was doing an experiment to see if he could get his students to mail in an assignment. And so he had divided his students into two groups. The first group were just given the assignment and told to mail it in. The second group were asked to make specific if-then statements. When would you mail it? Where would you mail it? And how would you mail it, right? So very specific plan with these specific if-then statements. The first group, which didn't receive any specific instruction at all, they were just told to mail the assignment, had about a 32% success rate. Not amazing, and probably not uncommon compared to, let's say, dog training client follow-through. But the second group, which did follow up on those if-then instructions, had a 72% success rate. So by creating this simple plan, this simple statements of if-then, describing exactly what they were going to do and when they were going to do it, the success rate more than doubled. That's pretty cool. Now, we can use that for ourselves. We can use that for our clients as well. And the difference is that they identified the responses that led to the outcome, the behaviors that needed to happen to result in the change or result in the outcome, the goal that we wanted of getting the assignment mailed, but they also identified the cues when that starts to parallel our ABC, right? So by identifying the cues as well as the responses, we have a much better chance of getting the outcome that we're looking for. And the same group of scientists did a psychologist, and found another study, or actually it's a couple of studies from around 2009, 2010. And this group of studies were looking at emotional regulation. Now bear with me, this actually is relevant. And so in these studies, they had three groups of people, and they were exposing these people to a situation or stimuli that was frightening. I think it was a spider, or I may have projected that because that would work well for me. And so there are three groups of people. The first group is told, don't be afraid. They're just simply told, don't feel frightened or disgusted. Try to believe that you won't be afraid. The second group is told, don't be frightened, don't be disgusted. And then they're also told to use an if-then statement. If I see a spider, I will stay calm and relaxed. The third group was just a control group. They're told nothing at all. What was the outcome? What happened? Well, it turned out group two had the best success in controlling their emotional responses. Well, that's pretty cool, because how many times have you gone into a training session telling yourself not to get frustrated if something goes wrong? And simply telling yourself that you're not going to get frustrated, well, if you're like me, it's not super helpful, right? Walking into the ring for a competition, just stop being nervous. You're totally bombing that because you're getting so nervous. So just stop being nervous. Oh, okay, sure. I'll just stop being nervous. I'll stop getting frustrated. I'll just stop having feelings. Well, it's not really very helpful. It's not very effective. It doesn't really change anything. And if anything, I'll then often feel guilty on top of feeling nervous and or frustrated, right? So because I failed at not feeling frustrated. Again, not helpful. Doesn't do anything to improve my long-term training outcomes. Well, but planning involves visualization to some extent, because you're thinking ahead, you're imagining what the choices might look like, you're imagining what those situations might look like, and that visualization activates those same areas of the brain that you're going to actually use when you're doing the doing, when you're training. And visualizing those actions actually improves performance in theory, because that circuit is already activated, so you can access it faster in the moment. And what's really neat is you put all these studies together and it becomes more and more clear that the stronger the relationship between the cue, the future situation that you're imagining, and whatever you've determined in advance to be your response, your behavior, then the greater the success of actually initiating that desired behavior, which of course leads to achieving the goal. Well, that's really cool. Again, that's all about, in a way, sort of stimulus control, right? So you're identifying, you're thinking through your if-thens. If this happens, then I will do this. And you're a lot more likely to come up with the response that you want. But that does, for us, mean we have two layers of planning we have to think about at a minimum. Three, if you're dealing with human clients as well as the dogs, right? So if you are training your dog versus if you are teaching a person to train a dog, we have lots of if-thens, layers of if-thens that we have to account for. We have to decide, but we'll concentrate on just you training your dog or me training my dog. So we have to decide what we will do and what the dog will do. So if the dog does X, I will respond by doing Y. If I say sit and the dog doesn't respond, so if the dog doesn't respond to the cue, I will take a step to the side. And what's really cool is I've observed this. Okay, there's lots of stuff about this that is very cool. I think everything about training behavior is cool, which is kind of why I do this. But anyways, so I've noticed a long time ago that by predefining what our responses to an error will be, and I hadn't even really been thinking about it in terms of I'm going to tell myself to feel calm. I'm more thinking of, well, I responded this way to a training error last session, and golly, that didn't work out in my favor. So I'm definitely going to make a different decision. Instead, I'm going to do this. And so by defining a specific action that I'm going to take and exactly when I'm going to do that, a non-response, so the dog just stands and stares at me when I say sit, I take a step to the side and I recue the behavior. It not only helps with the training, but that does relieve my frustration. I think, again, it goes back to that I'm identifying the cue and I'm giving myself an alternate behavior. And when I perform that alternate behavior, hopefully it gets reinforced, and that maintains that. So it helps me replace those behaviors that come in that box that we'll call frustration, with a different set of behaviors stepping to the side. And again, simply acting, moving, having a decision made relieves a lot of conflict. And so I am able to stay away from going down that frustration, anxiety spiral, right? Which is very helpful and in and of itself does tend to improve training outcomes. So think through your if-thens. Think about your training. Think about what you're going to do when your dog does a particular thing. There is no way to account for every possible weird thing that could potentially happen, but you don't have to. If you think through the 2, 3, maybe 4, I think 3 is a good number. Let's stick with 3. The 3 most likely things that are going to happen in a given situation and what your response is going to be in each case. So if I give the cue and the dog sits, I will click and treat. If I give the cue and the dog does not sit, I will step to the side and re-cue. If I give the cue and the dog lays down, I will step to the side, toss a treat, and then re-cue the sit. And it doesn't so much matter what you do there. You may have a different protocol that you would use in the case of these 3 situations. But simply thinking through the if-thens, you've identified the cue for what is going to be your behavior. And the more you link that cue, even just through visualization, with the behavior, again, even just through visualization, just using your imagination, the stronger that link gets. That's one of the cool things that we can do that is harder to take advantage of with the dogs. But it's definitely something that we can improve. And of course, when we effectively change our behavior, the dog's behavior will tend to follow because it does affect those antecedents and consequences, A, B, C. So for your homework, pick one thing you'd like to change. Maybe it's something you've been struggling with in your training and you've felt kind of stuck about. It could be a behavior in your dog, or it could be a response that you have to your dog's behavior. Sometimes it's easier to train myself not to mind when my dog eats chicken poop than to actually deal with the behavior. And that's a legit decision. Again, it's better made in advance. You can't make that choice while you're watching your dog gobble up chicken shit off the ground. You will be much more likely to make an emotional response. That is probably something you wouldn't have chosen. Okay, so think about this in advance. Think about something that you'd like to change, either the behavior or your response to the behavior, which of course are connected. Decide on your if-thens before the situation occurs. So right now, think about what you're going to do, what that if is going to look like. What's the cue that will tell you your response? What will you be seeing or hearing when the situation occurs? And then what your response is going to be when you see or hear that movement or event. And then report back. Let me know what your results are. Test it. You can reach me on Twitter at WonderPups. You can find me on Facebook, of course. You can send me an email. I look forward to hearing from you. Thanks for listening. To find the show notes for this episode and to find even more helpful articles and training tips, head over to my website, WonderPupsTraining.com. You can even grab a free PDF template to help you plan your training sessions and stay organized. Until next time, I'm Hannah Branigan. Happy training. Cheers.